you know, I'm just hearing the name and I'm thinking, who's the person who has the guts to say that? And then I'm thinking, oh, it's me. Okay. So here's how I'd like to structure this. My plan is to put people in small groups so each of you can talk about where is a dialogue that you'd like to be able to have and don't quite know how. And then we'll pick as many of those as possible. This is kind of like a roll up your sleeves, hands-on class, no curriculum, no reading ahead of time. Welcome back. Now comes the interactive part. Let's see how many people want to work with the situation that came up for you, if you have something you'd like to look at. So we have 6 people so far. Let's see how many of those we can do.
Hi, Mickey. The situation that I would like to talk about is a situation that's going on at my church. I'm involved in a group that is shepherding a process through it. The issue has to do with having art in the sanctuary, and it's an issue around which a lot of people have strongly held opinions, and the opinions are in significant disagreement. There's not a simple way to find an option that will satisfy everyone, and so I'd be interested in how to focus on needs in this situation to find a way to work a process through so that we end up with everybody feeling at least that they've been heard and that their opinions have been listened to.
Okay, and what's your role in this?
I'm kind of the chair of an ad hoc committee dealing with it.
Okay, so do you have opinions of your own that might be interfering with complete openness to everybody's needs? That's kind of like the first thing that I would look into.
I don't really think I do, but I appreciate that. There have been, in some of the discussions we've had, when I have expressed an opinion, I've noticed a certain tightness and constriction that's come up for me, even though it's something that I'm just trying to put out there for the group. I still feel this pressure to kind of get my point across.
So now I'm confused. So you're saying that you don't believe your ability to hear people is affected by your opinions, and that what is instead the case is that your ability to express your opinion, it sounds like, is hindered by your role.
I'm not sure that's exactly it. I don't have strong opinions about the issue of whether or not to have art in the sanctuary, what sort of art. So I don't think that's getting in the way, but I did notice in one occasion when I was just trying to bring up an issue.
Some other issue.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me then ask you, when you think about the different people with different opinions, is there any one of them that is a challenge for you to hear? No challenge, or is any of them challenging?
Yes, there are some people who don't want any art in the sanctuary. I think that's the most challenging thing for me to hear.
And do you have a sense of what their needs are? Here's the deal that seems now really, really clear to me in all such moments. If the conversation is, yes, let's have art, no, let's not have art, the only way to solve that problem is by a power struggle. You see what I mean?
That's exactly, yes, I do, and I think that's why that's challenging for me.
Okay, so do you know anything about the why? Why these people don't want to have art in the sanctuary?
One thing that they've said is that they find it distracting.
So now that's giving you a sense of the need. Can you name the need in your own words?
A need while they're in church to be able to concentrate and focus on the service.
There you go. Do you have that need?
I do.
Okay, so then that's an important need to keep in the picture of what's going to happen. So the way you do it is you create like one list of all the needs. So it's really important that whatever you do with art allows people to maintain their focus on the service. Whether there is art or there isn't, this is a really important consideration. Okay, do you know of any other needs that are affecting the reluctance to have art in the sanctuary?
For some people, I think it's a matter of feeling that the art distracts from the feeling of the sanctuary, that it's sort of a cluttered feeling or an issue with aesthetics, something like that.
Name the need. What are you hearing there as the need?
Maybe beauty.
Beauty. I also am hearing something about honoring the sacredness of the sanctuary. And I'm just wondering if doing the translation like this to the needs helps you connect with these people more.
It does. And I'm hoping that the people can also connect with each other. A goal of mine is not just for me to be able to work with the people, but for the people to be able to hear each other.
Yes, and you can help them. If you come in and you say, I've done some homework, I've, you know, tracked what everybody has been saying, and here are all the needs that I am hearing and what has been said so far, all in one list. Not, these are the needs of the people who want the art and these are the needs of the people who don't. Then you keep it polarized. You have one list of needs for everyone. And you bring it in and you say, here are all the needs that we need to attend to. Is there anybody here who has any needs that are not already on this list? You bring the people together. Do you see?
Yes. I'm feeling chills listening to that. I really like that a lot.
So I already see that those three needs are for sure part of the needs that lead people to want to have art in the sanctuary. Exactly the same needs. And there may be others. And you need to do a bunch more homework. And then once everybody gets all the needs and everybody says, yeah, I see my needs are in the list, and the list as a whole makes sense to me, then you put to the group the task of, so what can we do to attend to all these needs for everyone? And the group then is together solving problems. Obviously, I just gave you a 2-minute version of a 1 or 2 day training in how to facilitate decision making. But I think you have enough to get you going. Yeah?
I think so. I appreciate it. Yes.
Yeah.
I think I can get going with that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Here is what I'd like to do. In this moment, I'd like to ask if anybody has a follow-up question or comment. Here is someone.
My question was, do you have a brief bit of advice when you're in the sort of situation where you're trying to perceive needs and then go back to sort of two sides of a situation? I'm in a similar situation to Alan's in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really having trouble perceiving the human needs underlying the strategies that the groups keep?
If you have struggle perceiving the needs, it will diminish your capacity to be a resource to the group, basically,
yeah.
Because you are still thinking two groups, two sides, and that's the first thing that needs to go, is there's one group, many needs, not two groups, two sides. If you go in the direction of one group, many needs, your puzzle is very different. Got it?
Yes, that helps. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Here is someone.
My question is, what I heard you say to Alan is to determine what the needs are of both groups, the people who want art and the people who don't want art. So is that something that he's guessing and making the list?
Yes.
Okay, so he's not actually asking them, but he will check when they get back together.
Yes, he's doing the homework and he will check with them because he's the one with the skill. They don't necessarily have that capacity, but they can recognize it when he names it.
Okay, Thank you.
Uh-huh. And I think you had a one before, right?
I did.
How about we go with you then, since you're already on anyway?
I have to say I feel reluctant and tender to ask my question, but I did put my hand up because I want to ask it, but it's something that is near and dear to my heart. I've been walking through it for quite a while. It's regarding my son. My son is 30 years old, and he is, I guess, what we would call a binge drinker. I want to be able to support him and help him and feel ease and peace of mind for myself. Mm-hmm. And I've made some attempts to have conversations with him. Usually it's after there's been some kind of an incident. And because we don't live in the same town, there are people who have shared things with me because they have had concern about him. Mm-hmm. So it is how to continue to be able to keep the conversation open and going and not just have a conversation when there's a crisis.
I would say, first of all, that waiting until there is a crisis to have a conversation is not the most effective path. When there is crisis, you and he are both agitated,
mm-hmm.
which dramatically diminishes your skill and capacity. So let me ask you, has there ever been a moment in which you had a sense of full connection with him about the situation?
Yes, I had a conversation with him, and it was a day after a crisis situation. And then I felt like I made connection with him. And then I tried to actually have a conversation after that because I felt like, okay, what you're saying is, yes, it doesn't work as well when you're in crisis because there is some agitation and it was close enough to the crisis that we did make the connection. So I tried to have the conversation again. And at that point, he was not willing to have that conversation. How can I have that conversation with him when we are away from a crisis? Yes, that's what I would like to have.
So the first question that I have is, what is your sense of his story about himself?
I believe he has a story about himself is that he is shy and that in order to be able to have the kind of connection and feeling of belonging with people, mm-hmm. that he has to drink.
Got it. And is that something that's ever been articulated between you?
Yes.
Okay. So here is the fundamental, a kind of brutal sense that I like to have about such things. I want to hold myself, if I were you, to this standard. If I don't have something better to offer him for belonging and acceptance and mm-hmm. connection, on what grounds can I ask him not to drink?
Yeah, because he's doing what's important for him.
Yeah.
To meet those needs. Yes. And so, and this may be even too more complex because there have been some things that I have been trying to offer and his reply has been to me, I know exactly why I drink. And so I just know I need to avoid those situations and then wants to stop the conversation.
Avoid those situations. Which situations?
The situations where he feels like he wants to belong. It's like, okay, I know I need to avoid situations where I want to be with people or whatever. So that's what his strategy is. And it's not a strategy that's doable.
No, it's not. My hunch is that there's shame there. It doesn't take, as they say, rocket science to imagine.
Yes.
It.
And shame actually on both sides.
Mm. What's your shame?
Well, I think maybe self-judgment about me. Is there something wrong with me as a parent that I parented this child? You know, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever talked at this level?
You know what? I have not. In fact, that it brings up a lot of emotion now because so I think I've really connected with something. So I have never shared with him my shame.
And I think if you share with him your shame and you do it skillfully and you invite him to share with you his shame and you can sit in a place of mutual acceptance, it's a pregnant place. This is not that's going to change overnight. You asked for how do we continue the conversation? And my answer is by continuing to go deeper into an intimate sharing with each other.
That's big. I think that is something where I believe that we can, at least for me anyway, I have a sense that there could be some forward motion by me having that courage to have that conversation.
Wonderful. And tell me something. So, how do you feel right now?
You know, I have a sense of relief in a way. And it's kind of mixed with some maybe tears, but not necessarily of sadness. It's maybe mixed. It's grief. There is a little bit of grief there.
Let's take just a few seconds to hold that. Just don't rush. Just breathe quietly and let the grief flow. Just now, right now, with all of us. There's no particular place to go. So how is that to be quiet for a moment with this?
Yeah, that feels good. And it reminds me that I can sit with this. I can sit with this and be with this, and I think that it's a place where I can find even some peace myself, supporting myself.
Yeah.
Thank you.
With pleasure. All right. And once again, if there's any follow-up, please press 4.
So this is related to that. My husband has Asperger's, and he was diagnosed with avoidant personality disorder. So I've become aware of social anxiety disorders or things like this that people who are socially, maybe even neurologically, not wired real well for social interaction. And I've become really clear on how much anxiety that can cause them. And I think as for a parent, you know, to go into what did I do wrong as a parent, if they don't know that maybe there's something even beyond that, beyond their control, that's got to be a very scary place to go. So somehow I'm reaching out for her, too, that that might be even something the next place they could look. It might be something beyond either one of them did or did not do to develop those skills. And once you find that, then you can open a whole dialogue and category of help and awareness and skills, because I know the drinking and the pot and even overeating and avoiding. It was very hard for my husband to socialize, even though he had so much to offer in other ways.
Thank you. So I'd like to take up what you're saying and look at it from a different frame. And here's the different frame that I have. Human beings have neurological variability. We've had neurological variability for the entire time of our existence, because we are unique. What's new now is that the expectations about how we are supposed to be have become narrower and narrower. So more people find themselves outside, quote-unquote, the norm and suffer, where the same people sometime in the past would not have. So then what we end up doing is we're diagnosing those individuals and medicating them instead of looking at why are we creating an epidemic of people who are suffering. Do you see my frame?
Diagnosing them with something wrong with them, is that what you're saying?
When we diagnose and medicate them, it's like saying there is a problem with the individual and we need to fix the individual. And in my frame, the problem is with all of us in having created social structures that sustain fewer and fewer people.
My husband has often said that he doesn't fit in their concept of what it is, although I never dreamed of drugging him for it. But we have dialogue so we can find common ground. What does he need and what new skills can I give myself, or what skills can we share with him that will help him navigate? And also, what can I learn about our expectations? Yes, it's all part of that process.
Yep. Thank you. All right. So, if you're still awake?
I'm awake and I'm relieved because I have this thing that pressed me a lot. This is a woman, a client. She's 35, and I have her for a year. She came here for an outburst that she had, and she was doing pretty well.
She came for what?
Anger, a lot of anger, outburst.
Okay.
So she was doing pretty well, and up till 2 weeks ago, because she goes through a very stressful time at work. So she came last 2 weeks ago for the session. She was extremely angry with her father. So I try to be empathic, even though I have to admit that the more I would listen to her, I was thinking at the back of my mind that she's exaggerating. And toward the end of the session, I guess what I said is, it seems to me that you need your father to support you in this, and it seems that you don't have space at the moment to feel, to listen, to see his needs. And there she was angry with me. She said, no, you're wrong. She was unable to see his needs, and she didn't even want to hear about it. I was thinking about this all these 2 weeks now, because her contact to me, her relation to me has changed. She's been distant and cool.
Yeah.
So I think that she felt betrayed from her father, and then she felt betrayed from me.
Yes. So here is the thing. First of all, I want to say that a number of years ago, somebody came to me for individual work for an issue of anger. You know, she wanted to work on it because she was a public speaker on charged topics and she didn't want to lose it in public, and it was a very complicated thing. And for a while, I could do no wrong. And she was saying things like, for the first time somebody understands me, and things of this nature. And I didn't have the foresight to realize that there was no way that I could sustain that position indefinitely. Mm-hmm. It was bound to happen, and it did happen, that I said something, and I don't actually know what it is. And after I said it, and not in the moment, afterwards, if it was in the moment, I would know what it is that I said. But at some point during one of our sessions, I said something. And afterwards, it was like all life disappeared from her. And she, within a few days of that, she completely disconnected from me and refused to have any contact with me. I waited a year. I reached out to her again, and she repeated it. So I let go. But essentially, I'm saying this as a way of saying that if there is something so sensitive in her, you cannot not step on it. So the question is what to do now. And my thought is that the thing to do is a combination of telling her that you recognize that you spoke in a way that was really painful for her, and you want to hear more about it and see if you can repair it. That's the main thing to do, to really express your sadness and to invite her to speak more.
Of how she felt after my reaction.
Yeah, and I also want to say that her reaction somehow goes back to you thinking that she's exaggerating. When you start thinking that she's exaggerating, you're no longer with her.
I completely realize that. That's why I told you also.
So I'm wondering if that gives you a sense of something you can work with.
The thing is, I have a difficulty understanding what makes her so very strict and opinionated that she really wants her thing, which is really something that cannot be done, because she was insisting that this is my job, this is my work, this is my place, he has to do what I want. And that was not really, it didn't have anything to do with her work anymore.
You are still at the level of what's going to happen or not. And that's not a level at which transformation happens. The transformation will happen if and when you can connect with her at the level of what creates the intensity.
Yeah, that was my question. What creates the intensity in her?
I don't know, but you cannot make the intensity going away by telling her that what she wants cannot happen.
No, anyway, this is past because it has happened. The only thing that we are left with is if the thing between us now.
Yeah. So she came to you to be understood. The one thing that seems really clear to me about this woman is that she is extremely sensitive to being understood. She is used to not being understood and is always, even though she wants to be understood, she probably expects people not to understand her. And she is continually devastated by that. That would be my guess.
That is a good point. That's good. That can help me.
So it's kind of like I would want to extend to her the acknowledgement that clearly I did not understand her and that I really want to. I really, really, really want to. And is she willing to try to help me understand her?
That helps me a lot, Mickey. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, once again, any comments or questions on this?
I have a sister with similar issues, but I was thinking about someone I was talking to on the phone a couple of days ago about this sort of thing, about anger issues. She was saying that, you know, for some people who've suffered a lot of abuse in childhood, anger or really intense expressions of anger can be their way of trying to connect. It obviously results in the opposite of connection most of the time because people are, you know, put off by that, but from their perspective, it's a kind of very desperate need to connect. That really helped me because just dealing with my own sister who has pretty big anger issues, and I'm sort of terrified of her when she blows off because she can become physically violent, to remember that longing for connection, a very intense longing, is underneath that. That helps me.
Yeah, it's I would make it a bit more specific. It's about wanting, I think, to be seen in her suffering as a way of connecting. And having zero trust that anything less than a big, strong expression could go anywhere. Because if you try to say something not in this way, nobody will hear you.
Yeah, and I think reflecting that back, just hearing you say it that way feels empowering to me. If you reflected that back, well, you know, it's probably really difficult for you to trust anyone will hear you or understand you unless you get really, really angry, because in the past that didn't happen, you know, or something like that.
What happens, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Did you want to say something right now?
Thing that comes up for me is, I don't know if this is helpful or not, but obviously what you're wanting is to have connection with that person, and what was Vicky was wanting was to connect with that person so that she could support her, however, in whatever her situation was. What I interpreted her saying is she wasn't feeling connected, and she was having the sense that she was exaggerating. And so my question is there a way, if you have that sense, of expressing yourself of what's going on? I mean, I don't know that it would be good to say, oh, you know, I really think, you know, I'm not connecting with you because I have this sense you're exaggerating, but is there something you could say that might create a connection?
Yes. So I would think then, first of all, if someone is exaggerating, I have no way of knowing if someone is or isn't exaggerating. But if someone is exaggerating, why would somebody exaggerate? It's actually for exactly the same reason as what we just spoke about in terms of the anger. Because I want to be believed. I want to be believed that this thing is really serious. So if I make it even bigger, then maybe I will be believed. So if I believe that there is, that whether or not the person is exaggerating, my thought that the person is exaggerating can be an indication to me that somehow I am not sufficiently engaged with the depth of this person's suffering, then I can probably say something to the effect that, you know, whoever the person, I want you to pause for a second because I understand now intellectually that there is a lot of suffering in what you're talking to me about, and somehow I don't know how to feel it. Can you slow down for a moment and just see if you can say it in a different way, because I want to be heart connected with you. Is that something that you can...
Yeah, I love it, because actually the same thing happened to me when I was working with a client, and I was feeling disconnected, and I know this client was feeling disconnected, and I kind of had an agenda, and so I wasn't exactly sure what to say. I'm relating to this a lot.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm just curious if there's any more, as we are peeling off layers, if any more comes for you.
That has helped a lot, both comments, but especially the last one.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Hello, Mickey.
Hello.
Mickey, I have a granddaughter, 12 years old, who is now suffering with bullying at her new school. I'm seeing her tonight, and I have spoken to her parents, my son and my daughter-in-law, and I get on with my granddaughter very well. We have very close conversations. So tonight was the opportunity to talk to my granddaughter about what's going on at school. What I want to know is, what can I say to her at 12 years old that might help her deal with these other girls who wish to bully her?
Boy, the menu for today is so big. So were you ever bullied?
Yes, I would say my own sister did tease, and it was a kind of bullying, yes.
Tell her that you were bullied and what helped you survive it. It's one thing that comes to mind. Second, I take very seriously what Alice Miller said. She said, and it's not a quote, but it has stayed with me, that the issue about traumatic events is not that they happen per se, is that they happen and there's no one you can talk with about them. So if she can talk with you, then it will be easier for her to survive.
I think that was my approach with her mum and dad, to open the conversation and listen to what she was trying to say, because she has now shut down and won't tell them. And it was the school rang my daughter-in-law, her mother, and they reported an incident where my granddaughter had to be removed from the classroom because she really melted down.
Yeah, so the part of the dilemma about bullying is that the school personnel, they just don't know what to do. And often enough, they end up punishing the victims.
Well, I think they brought the two. There was one girl in particular and my granddaughter, and they brought the two together. I think there was an apology on both sides, but I don't think there's been anything more offered.
Why would they apologize? What were they apologizing for?
Well, that's it. I don't know.
I don't see apologies as being transformational. So what is transformational is humanizing each other. The girl who is bullying, there's something going on for her that would lead her to do this. If we don't understand what that something is and we don't offer her some way of attending to whatever distress lives in her, she will continue.
I think it goes beyond what the school is prepared to offer.
Yeah. So part of what I want you to hold is that bullying has been known. I'm not saying anything about your granddaughter because I don't know the circumstances, but people have killed themselves because of bullying. This is not a benign small thing. So I would put my efforts in three directions. One is to make sure that your daughter knows that she has a completely open door to talk to you anytime, day or night. She can't talk to her parents. She can't talk to her teachers. She can talk to you day or night, anytime. She suffers, she calls you. You establish that with her. Second is you talk to her about being able to maintain her own sense of dignity even when she's being bullied, which is a hard one to pull off. Within that context, being able to understand that she's being picked on, but she's not the cause, that the cause is some pain going on inside the girl who is bullying, that can help her keep things separate. It's hard, but it might be possible. And the third is you do some homework and research, and you go and have conversations with the school administration until something happens. And there is enormous amounts of information out on the internet, and there are a couple of movies. There is information out there. Just think of it in terms of supporting the administration in taking it seriously.
I'm sure there would be other cases as well.
Yes.
At the school. I only know of my granddaughter, but I'm quite happy to assist and encourage my son and his wife to assist the school as well.
Yeah. I wish I knew what else to offer, because this is such a big topic and the resources are so small.
Well, I think the support, that was my first thought. I must support her and allow her to talk it through and hear her. It must be open and explore her needs too, and even ask her to consider what might be going on for this other girl who also has several friends involved as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for looking after your daughter. As a former bullied girl, I feel very happy that she has you.
Yes, well, I liked your opening question about have I ever been bullied. I've got over it, but I can remember the feeling.
And that's a way that you can make contact with her.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, did you have something you wanted to add to this?
Bullied children often become bullies, and it's something so that child may have been bullied herself.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only comment.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, which reminds me, if you go on the web, you can find a video of a talk that I gave about bullying that maybe the school people might be interested in watching. That's another thought. You wanted to still say something about the bullying situation?
Thank you. I just wanted to refer the listener to an organization called No Bully. I believe it's based in San Francisco. If you look up No Bully, N-O-B-U-L-L-Y, some resources should come up.
Okay, thank you. Okay, before people say goodbyes, I want to hear from a couple of people just what you got from today's session.
I'm reconsidering about how to think about and frame intense anger.
Thank you.
Yes, you know what? I had a realization. The moment that I disconnected was when the wave of pain was coming to me, and then I realized that was the issue that I had with my mother when I was a teenager. I was extremely angry, and she was telling me that I was exaggerating.
Wow.
Thank you so much for this, Mickey.
Thank you. That was powerful. Thank you.
One thing I'm taking away is seeing once again that situations can transform when there's connection on the heart level.
Thank you. And you get the final word for today.
I really got how whatever someone brings up is useful to me. And
great.
We're all in this together.
Wonderful. All right. So let's open all the lines, and I hope that everybody will be coming back next time. Bye, everyone.